to get started. So there was a woman who decided to play a prank on her husband. And to do so, what she did, she took a piece of paper and she wrote on that paper, "My dear husband, I'm very tired of you, so I'm leaving you." She took the paper, she left it on their bedside table, and then she snuck up under the bed to wait for her husband to see his reaction. So after some time, she's waiting under the bed. So after some time, her husband comes home, reads the note, scribbles something on the note, then starts happily singing, starts changing his clothes, and while doing so, takes the phone, calls up some unknown number and says, "Hey baby, guess what? My wife finally realized, you know what, I wish I'd met you before I met her. She's decided to leave me. I'm coming to meet you right now. I'll see you in 15 minutes. And he hung up and left the house. The wife, a little shocked, heartbroken, teary-eyed, came out from under the bed, took a look at the note, and realized that her husband had scribbled, "My dear wife, I saw your feet under the bed. I've gone out to go and buy some bread." Now, not all marriages are lucky like that. In 2005, the TV sitcom Friends celebrity Jennifer Aniston had her marriage broken up after 5 years when her husband, Brad Pitt, decided to leave her for Angelina Jolie. In 2011, the Terminator, Arnold Schwarzenegger, had his marriage terminated because his wife found out that he had fathered a child with their housemaid without their knowledge. So something I want to talk about today is cheating. And cheating takes place right from the exam hall to the marriage bed. And to help us understand a little bit about cheating today, what I want to do is I want to talk about a community of people. Now, this group of people are called the Israelites. Why they're called the Israelites is they were descendants of a man whom God had nicknamed Israel. So his name was actually Jacob, but God said, "No, I'm going to give you another name, Israel." And so all his children came to be known as the Israelites. The passage we're about to read today is taken at a time when these guys have just been rescued from a foreign country where they were there for 400 years. So 400 years after being in Egypt as slaves, they've just been rescued. Now, God chose to rescue them, and he chose a man named Moses to rescue them from Egypt and take them to a new land. So all this while, you have to imagine, they're living in a country which they don't have private property. They don't own property. They were under another government. And now God is saying, "No, I'm going to take you to a place where you'll own land. You're going to have a different identity." And so Moses, the man that God had chosen, was taking them. So about 3 months into their journey, this takes place. Now, what happened is interesting. Now, moving to a new town can be a little nerve-wracking. When I moved to Mumbai, I was in Delhi before this, and before that in Bangalore. So when I moved to Mumbai, I was scared. And one of the most valuable tips anyone told me was, don't get into a Virar fast local. And I later understood why, because my friend told me she tried getting down at Andheri and she got slapped. So I said, oh man, I'm following these rules. So now Israel was going to enter a new country, a new land. So God decided to give them a few ground rules. Now, these ground rules later on came to be known as the Ten Commandments. So God gives them these ground rules, and Israel agreed. One of the reasons God gave Israel these ground rules was because he really liked them and he wanted them to reflect his name. Now imagine Bill Gates. Bill Gates is known for Microsoft. Yeah, now so imagine Bill Gates comes up to you and says, "I'm going to give you my legacy. You will be known by my name. But the only thing I want you to do is maybe you need to run your business or work in a slightly different way than the way you've been doing so far. And you agree because you're like, hey, Microsoft, Bill Gates, good legacy to be a part of, right? And you say, okay. So it was something similar. What God wanted was he wanted these Israelites to carry on his legacy. And one of the key features of God was that he was absolutely sinless or holy. So he said, you know what? You follow these ground rules and I'm going to make you holy. So this is what he says. Now, if you will obey me and keep my covenant, you will be my own special treasure from among all the people on earth. All the earth belongs to me. He's God. Earth does belong to him. And you will be my kingdom of priests, my holy nation. So what God was basically saying here was that you guys listen to these ground rules and I will make you my holy nation. I think that's a really good deal. Okay. So he gave them these ground rules to follow so that they would reflect his holy name. It was a conditional promise. And I would think twice before saying yes to something like, because these ground rules were very, very heavy. They were, oh man, they're not easy to follow. But you know what the Israelites did? Three times they said, yes, we will obey. Yes, we will obey. So three times in scripture, it's recorded that they agreed. So after they agreed, Moses, the man who's been communicating with them, who's rescued them from Egypt, brought them here. He says, okay, you wait here. I'm going to go and I'm going to talk to God. Now, this sounds a little Lord of the Ringish, but this actually happened, okay? So, there was this land where they were all there and Moses said, you wait here. I'm going to go talk to God and come. And God was on top of a mountain. So, he went on top of the mountain to talk to God. And this is what happens when Moses goes away. Peter's going to help us by reading the passage for us.
When the people saw how long it was taking Moses to come back down the mountain, they gathered around Aaron. Come on, they said. Make us some gods who can lead us. We don't know what happened to this fellow Moses, who brought us here from the land of Egypt. So Aaron said, take the gold rings from the ears of your wives and sons and daughters and bring them to me. All the people took the gold rings from their ears and brought them to Aaron. Then Aaron took the gold, melted it down, and molded it into the shape of a calf. When the people saw it, they exclaimed, O Israel, these are the gods who brought you out of the land of Egypt. Aaron saw how excited the people were, so he built an altar in front of the calf. Then he announced, tomorrow will be a festival to the Lord. The people got up early the next morning to sacrifice burnt offerings and peace offerings. After this, they celebrated with feasting and drinking, and they indulged in pagan revelry. The Lord told Moses, quick, go down the mountain. Your people, whom you brought from the land of Egypt, have corrupted themselves. How quickly they have turned away from the way I commanded them to live. They have melted down gold and made a calf, and they have bowed down and sacrificed to it. They are saying, these are your gods, O Israel, who brought you out of the land of Egypt. Then the Lord said, I have seen how stubborn and rebellious these people are. Now leave me alone, so my fierce anger can blaze against them, and I will destroy them. Then I will make you, Moses, into a great nation. But Moses tried to pacify the Lord his God. So the Lord changed his mind about the terrible disaster he had threatened to bring on his people. The next day, Moses said to the people, you have committed a terrible sin, but I will go back up to the Lord on the mountain. Perhaps I will be able to obtain forgiveness for your sin. So Moses returned to the Lord and said, oh, what a terrible sin these people have committed. They have made gods of gold for themselves. But now, if you will only forgive their sin, but if not, erase my name from the record you have written. But the Lord replied to Moses, no, I will erase the name of everyone who has sinned against me. Now go, lead the people to the place I told you about. Look, my angel will lead the way before you. Sorry. And when I come to call the people to account, I will certainly hold them responsible for their sins.
Great. Thank you, Peter. So that passage was taken from a book in the Bible called Exodus. So in this passage, there's three predominant characters. There's Israel, there's God, and there's Moses. So what I want to do is to reflect on this passage by breaking it down into three things. We're going to be looking at Israel's cheating heart, God's broken heart, and Moses' pleading heart. So let's get started with Israel's cheating heart. So now there are three reactions that Israel had when Moses was away. Now when my parents would go out of town, they would leave someone in charge. So when Moses went away, he left Aaron in charge. And I've got to admit, Aaron did something that I also did, is to I led my brother to party, and basically when my parents were away, we were not very good children. So this is similar to that. So let's see what happens, okay? So one of the first things that they do is when Israel saw how long it was taking for Moses to come back down the mountain, they gathered around Aaron. Now this is a man, Moses, who had led them for a long time, and then 3 months further into their journey away from Egypt. So suddenly Moses didn't come back the way that they thought he would. You know, so he wasn't coming back. So they must have gotten impatient. So instead of waiting, out of impatience, what did they do? They turned to Aaron. The next thing that they did was they said, come on, make some gods who can lead us. Now, God was present throughout. Regardless of whether Moses was there or not there, God was present throughout. But just because Moses disappeared for 40 days, they wanted new gods to lead them, which implies that maybe it wasn't God who they were worshipping in the first place. Maybe it was Moses who they were worshipping and not God. And what happens when Moses doesn't show up? They say, we don't know what happened to this fellow Moses who brought us here from the land of Egypt. Now see, to be chosen to speak to God is a big deal. Now imagine Bill Gates retires completely and he says, I am choosing Ajita Anand. Only she will represent me. Only she will speak for me. Man, I would respect that. I mean, I respect her otherwise also. But if she was Bill Gates' only spokesperson, I'd be like, whoa, I would wait for her to get back and listen to her. But the Israelites were like, what happened to this fellow Moses? Where's he gone? That was their attitude. While God chose to bestow honor and respect on Moses, the Israelites chose to dismiss him. And they turned to Aaron. So through these three statements, the Israelites had replaced Moses with Aaron. And Aaron in turn said, okay, come, let's worship the golden calf. One replacement after the next. So I'm going to ask you, do we have this habit? I'm going to have to make a very dark confession, and please don't hold this against me. When I was 8 years old, I had heroes too. They were in the form of 5 men known as the Backstreet Boys. I loved them. And I really thought that, wow, they're the coolest band on the planet. They're just so amazing. Their music is so good. After some time, I got a little disappointed with them. So I shifted to other bands. I shifted to NSYNC. And then slowly, as I grew older and maturer, the music moved to the Doors, Pink Floyd. And now I like Dave Matthews' Band. So you see, I've been shifting my allegiance from one musician to the next, because one musician just failed to satisfy my taste. And we tend to be like that. In fact, at our workplace, and Anand was sharing this, when our work goes well, when our appraisal is going well, oh, we love our job, we love our boss, we love our colleagues. Ah, but the moment we get pulled up for something, we want to quit. We don't like our boss and we don't like our colleagues. One replacement after the next. You see, the Israelites couldn't see God. They saw Moses, a man who delivered them from their slavery. You know, it's very, very easy to worship the people who've rescued us from a bad place. It could be that person who gave you a job when you didn't have a job. It could be someone who gave you a new identity. We often end up worshiping God's instruments instead of worshiping God. The second thing they did, when Moses didn't come back to them as expected, they replaced him by turning to Aaron. When our heroes disappoint us, we reject them. I had a friend whose father was working in the Navy. Now, you know, that time when we were younger, communication wasn't great. So there were times when uncle wouldn't come back as scheduled. He would have taken a few days longer, a few times longer. But just because uncle didn't come back on time, his wife didn't run off with someone else. Now, when the Israelites couldn't wait for Moses to come back, they turned to Aaron. I'm sorry to use this word, it's a little harsh, but their behavior was promiscuous. They were just turning from one to the next. You know, our heroes are going to fail us many times over before they die. Our heroes will die. But God is not like that. You know, Aaron, in turn, led them to worship an inanimate object created from their wealth to replace God who rescued them from Egypt. Now, maybe we don't worship golden calves, but our idol worship takes a different shape. We worship our bosses. We worship the cars we'd love to own, the holidays we'd love to go on, the dresses we'd love to wear, the figure we wish we had, the salary we wish we had. There are so many things, seen and unseen, known and unknown, that become the things we worship. The biggest deception is we've told ourselves that the gods we worship are within the four walls of a church or a temple. That isn't true. The real gods we worship are the things that control our heart. Israel cheated on their word with their promiscuous behavior. Israel cheated on God when they turned away from their word. They had promised God three times, not just once, three times, okay, we will obey. But when Moses went away, they turned to something else. And just like Israel, we cheat on God by replacing him when we can't see him or hear from him. Don't we all have those times when we're just not hearing from God? We don't see God. And then you start turning to other idols. We're promiscuous, no matter how rule-abiding we think we are. So that was Israel. Let's see how God reacts. God's heart was broken. Now, in the passage that we just read, you can see God getting angry. I wanted to just explain a few things. One, when we think of God, we often assume he's this abstract, distant, perfect being who does not relate to us, that he does not understand our emotions. He doesn't get what we're going through because he's God. He's perfect. That's what we think. When Jennifer Aniston found out about Brad Pitt cheating on her, and after they divorced, media reports covered that it took her a really long time to get over. She was heartbroken. When God had his most beloved group of people turn their back on him, his anger came from jealousy. Anand just shared that a man, a married man, has the right to be jealous when his wife flirts with someone else. So I want to spend a few moments just discussing God's jealous anger. I would like you to imagine two scenarios. One, a man walks in on his wife cheating on her. Two, a man has all his money, bank balance, everything taken away, cheated from him. Do you think these two men have a right to be angry? Are they justified in getting upset? Then why is it when God gets jealous, we ask, but he's God, how can he get jealous? But he's God, he has emotions just like you and me. He loves, he hurts, he's happy. These are emotions very much part of a real God. The only difference between God's emotions and our emotions are that God is sinless. He's pure. So even in his anger, it's absolutely sinless and pure. Now, if you're wondering, but you know, the Israelites didn't know. No, they knew. God actually told them when he gave them the ground rules, you must not bow down to them or worship them, that is other gods, because I, the Lord your God, am a jealous God who will not tolerate your affection for other gods. You know, it's easy to feel sad for Jennifer Aniston or anyone else who's been cheated on. But when we see God's heart, what's our reaction? Like a man whose wife has cheated on him, God's heart was aching because a nation that promised to be his had aroused his jealous anger. The Israelites aroused God's jealous anger when they chose to worship things other than him. Are we doing the same thing? Are we choosing to put our career before God? Sometimes we can cheat on God with the very spouse who God gave us to spend our life with. Or maybe even the man or woman you want to marry. Or that dream destination or job that you want. We can use the good things that God has placed in our life and replace God with them. God's purpose has always been to have a relationship with us. Are we choosing to worship other things? God's heart is jealous for each of our hearts' love and affection. And God's heart breaks every time we replace him. So now in the passage that we read, God was angry. But you had someone who stepped in and said, no, hold on, please don't do this, please don't destroy them. So we're going to see Moses' pleading heart. There's a part where we just read where Moses is pleading with God. Now, there were three things Moses did. Moses, he tried to pacify God's anger. He knew, he was angry. Have any of you faced this? You know, I remember my brother caused a lot of, was a very mischievous boy. And I used to feel bad when my dad used to get a little angry with him, especially when he was in college. So I used to try to pacify my dad. And likewise, when my dad used to get angry with me, my brother would go and he would try to pacify them. Now, Moses went to God and he tried to pacify God's anger by telling him to remember the promises he had made, by asking God to change his mind. But you know what? When Moses was pacifying God, he didn't deny the fact that the Israelites had sinned. He faced up to the fact that the Israelites had in fact sinned. He didn't try to make any excuses. And the third thing he did was he begged for God's forgiveness. And there's a portion which we read where Moses says, you know, if you can't forgive them, then you take my name out. Basically, he was saying, if you can't save them, then don't save me. You take me away, take away my life, but forgive them, save them. But God says, no, it's okay. I will punish those who have sinned. Coming back to Jennifer Aniston, you think she would have married Brad Pitt if she had known that this guy is going to cheat on her 5 years down the line? Why would God make a promise with a bunch of people who are promiscuous? God knew how Israel was going to behave, and God knows how you and I behave. He knows our heart's affections better than we know it ourselves. But the question really comes down to this. Why would God enter a covenant with a nation he knew would be unfaithful? You know, in the Bible, from start to finish, the answer to that question lies in the name of one person. Jesus, the Son of God. Now, Jesus too was part of a community. He had the Father and the Father's Spirit. And the three of them had one community. But God knew beforehand that the people he was choosing to love and be in a relationship with were promiscuous. I'm referring to us, not just the Israelites. And so you know what he did? It says in 1 Peter chapter 1 verses 18 to 20. This is a verse from the second half of the Bible, which says, "For you know that God paid a ransom to save you from the empty life you inherited from your ancestors. And it was not paid with gold or silver, which lose their value. It was more precious. It was the precious blood of Christ, the sinless, spotless Lamb of God." God chose him, that is Jesus, as a ransom long before the world began. But now, in these last days, it's been revealed to you for your sake. So even though Moses was trying to pacify God's anger, he admitted to Israel's guilt and he pleaded on their behalf. There was something which he couldn't do. Moses tried to pacify God's anger, but Jesus took God's wrath and died for it on the cross. You know, when Moses went and tried to pacify God, he was trying to calm God down and forgive them. But what about us? We don't have Moses. Moses is not around here every time we make a mistake to go up to God up the mountain and say, "Please forgive them." So what happens once Moses is gone? Who pleads on the behalf of the promiscuous one? Jesus. Jesus was chosen before you and I were born, before the creation, to plead and pacify God's anger. And Jesus' sacrifice on the cross cost a lot more than the golden calves we worship. Moses admitted to Israel's guilt, but you know what? He couldn't place their guilt on him. God said, "I will punish those who have sinned." God knew he had to hold sin responsible. And you know what Jesus did? He placed that guilt on his shoulder. He said, "Okay, you've sinned. I'm going to pay the price." So as much as we often have a very flurry-eyed notion of who God is and how Jesus has taken away the sin, we have to remember the two things. There is a consequence to sin, the punishment. And Jesus bore that punishment on the cross. Moses very sweetly offered his life as a ransom, but God didn't take up that offer. You know why? Because God knew long before that offer, that ransom had already been made in Jesus. Every person born since Moses is sinful. When Moses said, I will pay the price, you take my life away, he thought he was above the Israelites. He thought he was not as sinful as the Israelites. But the truth, the reality, is no matter how sinful the Israelites we think they were equally bad. In fact, the moment a child is born, that child is born a sinner, no matter how cute or cuddly they are. They're very sinful. So each person, no matter how rule-abiding, is sinful, which is why God had Jesus conceived of his spirit to be born sinless. You remember the holy name we were talking about? Jesus came to earth as holy and paid the price of our promiscuity. He died on the cross to pay the price that we should have paid. Now, I work as a lawyer, and one of the basic principles in any law is that if you arrest a person, you hear the person's case and you find them guilty, and say the court says you are sentenced to 3 years in prison. Once that sentence is over, is that person guilty anymore? No matter how society looks at them, is that person guilty anymore? No. So when Jesus died after being hung on the cross, the price was paid. There was no more guilt. So what Jesus did, he came back to this earth. He came back to this earth, spent time with his disciples, his friends, and then he went back to heaven. Just like Moses, Jesus has gone on top of the mountain. And just how Moses was pleading for our sin, Jesus pleads, is pleading, and will continue to plead till we stop being promiscuous, till our identity changes from being cheaters to being faithful. Once a person betrays you, you're not going to trust that person again. But God chose to love us. We just sang that song. What I love most about God is that he chose to love us before we chose to love him. God chose to enter a beautiful relationship with us and see us as faithful instead of promiscuous because of what Jesus did. Now Jesus is on top of the mountain. He's with God. He's pleading. What are we doing? He's left us down like Moses left the Israelites. How are we reacting? What's our response? Are we also indulging in revelry? Because, hey, God's not here. He's not looking. God's there. He's watching. But he's watching, and he's given us this hope that we live with the reality that we are being transformed to be faithful. You know, one of the reasons that here we at New City encourage each other to be part of a community group called GAP, or we encourage each other, you know, to spend time alone with God in the morning, is because that serves as our daily reminder of who God is, perfect and holy, and who we are. You know, so the way we do quiet time with God is we follow a tool called Community Bible Reading. There are four boxes in that. The first box is adoration. The second box is confession. You know, the reason we do that is to remind ourselves who is God. He's holy. He's chosen to love us before we chose to love him. He's jealous for us. And out of that jealousy, he sacrificed his own son. But we move to the confession box because we examine our heart to see, who am I replacing God with? What am I replacing God with? And that's where we confess. God, I've replaced you. I've replaced you with my job. I've replaced you with this person who I really, truly, madly love and I hope will marry me one day. I've replaced you with my ambition to become an amazing lawyer, an amazing banker, an amazing musician. These are all things we replace God with. And the reason we encourage us to do this every day is it's a daily reminder of what our idols are. But it doesn't stop there. By looking at Jesus and what he did on the cross for us, it's a daily reminder that we can overcome our idols through what Jesus did. When Jesus died on the cross, it was not just to pay the penalty, but also to overcome the power our idols have over us. Through daily reminders of who God is, what Jesus has done, we break away from our promiscuous behavior and we're empowered by God's Spirit to be faithful in preparation for Jesus' return. You know, we sang that song, He is Jealous for Me. It's God's jealous anger for us, birthed out of pure and perfect love, that enabled Him to sacrifice His closest community member, Jesus, so He could make you and I His community member.